Hey, it's Dean from Collective Soul, and you are talking rock with Dave and Shane.
It's Shane McGochran!
Hey, everybody, this is Joel Linter.
Hi, everybody, this is Rob Halford.
Rudy Sargent.
Hey there, this is Steve Hackett.
Hey, folks, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph, and we're talking rock with Dave and Shane.
Dean Rowland, welcome to the show. Of course, you guys have a big project coming up with your 30th anniversary tour, and of course, Here to Eternity, the album, May 17th. Yeah. How does it feel to be doing this 30 years? Does it feel like it's been that long?
It depends. It depends on the morning. And when I wake up, sometimes I'm like, "Oh God, I'm getting old." Yeah. No, it's great, man. We've taken the gratitude approach and really appreciative of the opportunity that we had early on, like 30 years ago, of having, you know, mainstream success and had songs that people liked, and we were able to keep it going and do what we love for a living, man. It really, you know, I wish that for everyone.
Yeah. There's so many people who grew up, I mean, I grew up with you guys, you know, in the 90s. I mean, you guys were all over the airwaves, and it was still old school back then, right? Yeah. It was album tour, the Blue Album, you know, Hints, Allegations. I mean, I remember when the one with the Discipline Breakdown. I remember when that came out.
Wow.
And it was just like, you know, it was like hit after hit after hit and video after video after video. Right. Was that, I mean, that was old school, right? Do you kind of miss those days, you know?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I kind of like, you know, not to sound too whatever, but like, I love where music. It's always an evolution. Like if you look back on it, it's always trending and doing its own natural process. And I love being here now. I really do. That was fun. Yeah. It's nice to think back. And we're not the kind of guys necessarily that like do a lot of reflection, but doing it being 30 year anniversary, we were doing we did a career spanning documentary and incorporated the recording of the latest album that's coming out in May into that documentary. So we had to do a lot of reflection and talking and thinking about the past and the ups and downs and, you know, all of those things. And it really puts you in a place of like being thankful, because right? There's so many times it could have completely gone off the rails. So many times, like my brother and I maybe not were in the best place. And, you know, you just have to work through those things, you know, and it's a testament to our shared passion for music and I guess even in the band, the love for one another. It's like, you know, we actually get along with each other for the most part, and we love playing music. So,
It's, you know, it's literally a brotherhood with you and you know, I've always thought, okay, you got the Van Halen brothers, you got the Robinsons, there's a few bands with brothers, and then there's Collective Soul. What's that dynamic like? I know brothers can be, it depends, right? It can sort of be, you know, good one day, sometimes not so good, right? But being in a band together, what's that all like?
It's great. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you're with someone who has your back to the end degree, right? So that's like a given with us. Now, that middle part of just like trying to get to we know the destination, but like maybe two different approaches. I mean, Ed's 9 years older than I am, 9 or 10 years older, and we have different personalities. So it's like, you know, I'm looking out there going, all right, we can go. I know where we're going. He knows where we're going. I want to go. And I'm like, all right, let's take this way. He's like, we're going to go this way. I'm like, man, come on. This way. So you're constantly having those kind of battles, but I mean, out of like, not to sound too trite, but it's like, kindness and respect makes the path a little easier.
Yeah, totally. 30 years, new album coming out May 17th. I mean, is it, the Collective Soul's always had, you've always been able to keep the sound fresh. But at the same time, or like, you know, update it, but still people hear it, they know it's Collective Soul. I mean, is that a balancing act? like, you know, how do you approach kind of moving forward? Is there a new sound you try to go for while also staying within that collective soul, you know,
You
tradition, or does it just happen
right.
naturally?
We try to keep it pretty authentic, you know, like we love being in the studio and experimenting, like, you know, seeing what sounds and what, you know, ever, you know, we can come up with at the time. We don't put the pressure on ourselves to be like following a genre or even trendsetting, or we, you know, we just do what we love. Like in when you're writing a song or you're playing and you're in the studio, you're looking and waiting for that spark to happen, right? That creative spark. And then you follow that trail. And then the grand goal is to find a song that you feel great about that has some honest lyrics and a melody that you can sing along to, and you know, a good backbeat. To not to oversimplify it, but that's really what we're doing, you know. It's like, so we're going into it just trying to be authentic, being who we are, and it's not for some people and it's for a lot of people too, whatever it may be. But I feel like as long as you can be as authentic to yourself and honest and make that expression, that's what I call art.
Yeah. Is there always that? I imagine there's still that spark, like when a song, because I know the process, we talked to Will a while back, and he said, like, the process kind of starts with Ed, I think. Is there that, there's still that moment after all these years where you all light up in a room and you're like, okay, that's it, or that's the take, or, you know, is there still that moment, that fire, that when you know things are connecting?
Yeah, I mean, recording this last record, we did at Elvis Presley's estate in Palm Springs, and once we kind of got past the reverence of being in at his house. No one had recorded there since he passed. I think he did like two gospel records there. So once we got past that thing, we kind of lock into our world and it's our bubble. And yeah, those moments are, whether it's like, you know, you're getting your feet wet with the first couple of takes on a track, and you hear something that Johnny, our drummer, is doing. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. And then it starts to like, it could be with John, or it could be something, a lyrical component that Ed's doing or Jesse's playing, wherever it's coming from. You'll catch those moments, and it's like, okay, it feels like we're onto something that we can stand behind.
I was gonna ask you, how did you get over that reverence? I mean, that's gotta be, I'm sure, you know, you guys have played some amazing venues, you've recorded in amazing places, but this is like where, and this is like, you know,
Yeah,
like, how did you, that must have been just overwhelming at first.
it was. It really was. And because it, I mean, it was interesting. Like that, the house hadn't been lived in for many, many, many years, and the like, not much has changed for better or for worse. Like it was the same appliances that were there when he was living, and the bathrooms were the same. So you really get that nostalgic feeling. So it was something that you kind of take it in, and you respect the place, and like I said, the reverence of it. And then you go to work, and then you find yourself in a bubble, and everybody kind of finds their spot where, you know, where we're going to set up and start recording. And takes a little bit of time, but not much. And we started, you know, rolling with it.
You guys, what's always interesting about Collective Soul is you're a band from the South, right? Stockbridge, I want to say, right? Georgia. But you don't sound like a Southern band, right? Like, which has always been kind of, not that you have to, obviously, but has that always been a surprise, you know, for folks who kind of discover the music? And, you know, because Will was talking about some of those Southern influences that are in the music here and there, but at the same time, you obviously have your own sound, and it doesn't immediately sound like this is like a Southern rock band. Has it always been kind of surprising to you, or not
Yeah,
really?
I mean, I think every artist, musician, songwriter, like you're pulling from, you're a derivative of your influence, right? So we grew up children of the 80s, so like the early MTV era, right? So and Ed, like I said, was a little bit older. So Elton John is his biggest influence, probably. Elton John and the Cars. And then for me, it was like the Beatles for sure, but like the early 80s was like NXS and The Police, U2, psychedelic first. So that world. So there's like probably a lot of Brit pop stuff that kind of seeps into our world. Well, Elvis Costello is a huge influence
Okay.
on us that we love. And I think that's what it is. I didn't grow so maybe it's odd to say I didn't grow up like a Skinner fan or Allman Brothers. Now I am. Once I, went further into it, I just wasn't really exposed to it that much as a young dude. Now, like I call those dudes friends. Like it's so. I think it's just like what you're kind of exposed to and what you're naturally drawn to in the beginning. It's a nature versus nurture argument.
It's I know yeah I read somewhere that Ed one of the mind-blowing experiences for him is when Elton John bought him a piano, right? Or gave him one of his pianos. That had
Yeah.
to have been like, you're talking about full circle, that had to have been like such a
Oh, it was outrageous. Elton, he's such a good dude. He was one of the first people. Like, I'm not one to really be, and I'm not being boastful, but like, I kind of take people as humans for what they are, and we're all kind of doing our thing. But the first time I met Elton, it was just like all encompassing. I'm like all the records I've heard, all the shows that I had seen was like, oh wow, like you're real. You're not a character of yourself. And he was so kind and just disarming and down to earth as magnanimous as his character is and his
Yeah.
charisma is. So him getting in that piano was like a it was such a, like you said, full circle moment of like, the one who inspired.
Yeah, had to be. Oh man. You know, I was always curious with Collective Soul. I mean, there's a lot of bands that have like the two guitar approach, you know. I think it Kiss. I mean, some of the metal guys, Priest, Maiden, but you know, when Ed plays, it's actually three guitars. And it's interesting how like I've always been listening, and sometimes it would be hard as a listener to find, okay, well, where's this person and where's that person? And but it's like the way it all blends together has been so interesting. I mean, is that just part of the natural chemistry of the band, or was there always a conscious effort to balance kind of, you know, a three guitar attack whenever you have three guitars mixed in?
Yeah, well, we never really looked at it from a musical perspective, I mean, our instrument perspective, right? We've always been driven by the song. So whatever the song calls for, we're going to serve that, right? So there, I say this often as a rhythm guitar player, and it's a little kind of cliche to say, but my best notes and probably my band believes this for sure, but like my best playing is when I'm not playing, and there's a joke in there for them. But it literally is like when you step out and you step in, and it's really is serving the song. And some songs they don't call for three guitars, or Ed does half the set with not playing. He would prefer not. I mean, and he's a great guitar player in and of himself. He'd prefer to just get up there and sing and do his thing. So you just find it, right? You see what lands and find that balance and serve the song,
Yeah. 30th anniversary tour. I know you said you guys don't generally look back and you stay in the moment, but obviously this tour is kind of a celebration of all those years. Is it kind of wild that, I mean, there's fans that grew up with you and then there's like their kids in the audience. You're at that point, right? I mean, is that, well, you probably have families that you take on the road with you too, your own families, but do you get a kick out of that? Like you got people who were there in the crowd in 1995, 96, you know, and then all of a sudden their kids are out there and singing the same songs. How does that feel?
Oh, it's great. It's so much fun. And as I mean, when we were younger, that had probably been strange. We're like, why are there, parents with kids and grandparents with grandchildren? But it's like, you respect your place in the game, and it's fantastic, man, to see that generational transition. It's a blast. We do our meet and greets, and we make ourselves relatively accessible. So when we're at a venue or somewhere, doing a show, I love it when you see kids come up and you know they want a pair of drumsticks or a pick, or they're learning how to play the instrument, you know, whatever it may be. I love it. I mean, that's how we did, you know, that's how where it came from for me, you know, like watching musicians and artists do their thing.
Totally, man. Here to Eternity is the new album. Do you have a favorite track? Is there other? I mean, I'm sure you love them all, you know, obviously. But is there one or two? Are there some that just stand out to you that are like, you know, some of your favorites that you can't wait to? You've been really looking forward to play live and.
Well, I'm gonna, well, Bluer Than So Blue is probably my favorite because for me, it kind of, it's a classic Ed Roland like riff, cuts to an open melody, with some great lyrics, in my opinion. And it's like a, if you like Collective Soul, if you like what we do and what we've done, you'll like that song. You know, like that, and it's fun to play live. It's that kind of vibe. And then one other one that I've always, it's kind of stuck with me even through, like, because some of these songs we played prior to recording, like in live sets or rehearsal or sound checks and whatnot, is the song Not the Same. I love that song from a lyrical perspective. It's just like, it's a very vulnerable, you know, pop love song.
Yeah, cool, man. Yeah, there's some great stuff on the from what we've heard, and it's just it's exciting for us as fans because like we've you know being you it's it sounds cliche, but you know bands like Collective Soul, you've been the soundtrack, you know, to so many lives and so many ups and downs for people, and I'm sure you get people coming up to you all the time. You know, you guys were really there for me. You never knew me, but you were really there for me when I was going through this or going through that. I mean, there's got to be endless stories, right? Like that.
There is, and you know what I do? I can only say thank you, and I relate because music's done the same thing for me. Whether it's you know, I heard a whatever song, and it's like in an up or down part of my life, whether you know, celebratory or going through sorrow, music has been the one, I guess, like. Yeah, the one thing that I could completely lean on, aside from my mother, I guess, right? I knew it would always like have my back, and I could lean on it to help me get through whatever I was going through.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. Any crazy tours? I mean, like you've had so many tours over the years. Are there tours that stand out to you? I mean, you guys went out with Van Halen way back. Was that like, you know, we're huge Van Halen fans on this show. Was that kind of a
It was
mind bender?
amazing. Oh, it was amazing. Amazing. There was Eddie was such a, it was his first tour sober. And he was so clear-headed and amazing and just a, I mean, and I'm so thankful that we shared that time with him. I remember, like, it was the first show we had been doing, we somewhere in Florida. I'm gonna forget the anyway, Fort Lauderdale, maybe. I don't know. We were the first shows we had done a couple of rehearsals, all of us, both bands. And the first show was kicking off, and he was backstage, and he was just so open and vulnerable. And like, you good, dude? He was like, man, I'm really funny. I can't talk in Eddie's voice, but he's like, oh man, I'm just fucking nervous, man. I've never done this sober. Whoa, okay. Hey, dude, I think you're Eddie Van Halen. I think you have this one regardless of what's going on. But
It's in the
it was really
DNA.
sweet. He was so kind. I remember him giving us each one of the guitars, and he pulled the guitars out of the box in our dressing room. He played it, and he was just like, got his feel for it and just handed it to us. I'm like, what is this dude? Like, he's this is out of this world. Like, and then to this day, we're still friends with Sammy and Alex. So those guys are exceptional. We actually saw them a few weeks ago. We played a show with those boys, Sammy and the Circle.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, that's where I saw you guys. I think my first time seeing Collective Soul was it was later. It was 2016 in Philly, 2016 or 2017. It was at the Mann Center with Sammy and Mike on that, or was it the Circle? I want to say it was the Circle, or maybe it was the Wob. I think it was the Circle. Yeah, it was a pretty cool tour, man. And that's when I kind of learned the history of you guys going back to, like, the
Yeah.
Balance era.
Right.
When they handed you one of those guitars, was that just like, I think Billy Corgan said something like, he played one of Eddie's guitars in his studio, and it was like, holy crap, like it was so much power or something like that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. That dude, he was special. He's easy. He's eternal, for sure.
Absolutely, man. Are there venues like that are always favorites to play? Like just iconic venues, whether it's hometown or just around the country, around the world, that you always look forward to playing?
Yeah, hometown. Like, so we play Atlanta. I love playing Atlanta, but it's so stressful because you have, so it's like you want to be the, everybody is celebrating and they want to share it. And so you're just getting a lot of hometown love. And my mentality is like, I want everybody to be happy. And it's like, it's a little overwhelming, but once we're on stage, it's so much fun. As far as venues go, man, I remember as a kid, like seeing U2 play at Red Rocks.
Yes, I was just gonna say, I bet you were gonna say Red Rocks, yeah.
So I always had that in my
So
brain
iconic.
as like a dream. I didn't. My dream was just to go there as a child, and then I actually, have been able to play there multiple times. So I love that venue. I love that city. All of it. So that one stands out for sure.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. We're our show, we do it in Philly and Detroit. Are those cities that ever stood out to you? I mean, two big music towns. Are those cities that ever kind of stood out to you coming up? Like, bands from either Philly or Detroit, they were just like, oh wow, that kind of is interesting, or this is interesting, that type of thing.
From the bands from there or us playing there?
From the bands from there. Yeah, either playing shows there or just any bands that you grew up with from
Yeah,
Philly or
I mean,
Detroit.
Detroit always had the something in the back of my brain. It was like obviously like the Motown stuff, like that. I mean, nothing needs, that stuff is monumental. And then, MC5 is from there. Like there was like this punk rock scene that was kicking, and I mean, it's Detroit Rock City is the name. Like that, I mean, it's not called that for a reason. So that one's always it was always in my brain. And when we first went there, early on in '94, we had just gotten signed, and we had gone from being in Atlanta just playing clubs and not really having a following to getting some radio airplay and getting it. And I absolutely remember Detroit just being, oh, whoa, okay, these people are serious about their music, and that one's always stuck with me. So yeah, for sure. If, obviously, and with Philly, like the Philly soul sound, like that stuff resonates for sure.
I was playing some of the Bowie stuff from Philly. I was Sigma Sound, and it's just like, it's just mind blowing how many eras there are just in all these, great cities around the country, and obviously some great Atlanta bands too, Dean, anything else you'd like to add, man? I mean,
Yeah, Atlanta's an interesting city with music. It's so diversified. It's got its, obviously the hip hop stuff is absolutely, the mecca, really. But from Otis Redding to Allman Brothers, I mean, that's Georgia, but in general, it's like it's so diversified. It's such a rich culture in music. James Brown,
Oh
so
yeah,
it.
right.
And then for us, it's like REM was a huge influence on us. B-52s, that stuff. So we grew up in, a pretty rich culture of diversified music. It's very fortunate for that.
Yeah, there's so much. Yeah, you're right. In different genres. I think it's just cool. You can, some of those guys you can call friends now, like from the Allman Brothers, and it's like just, I just going back to that like full circle thing, it just gets cool. It's like, I mean, you're,
Oh, it's so
you know,
weird. I don't know how else. It's just strange. Your life grows into this place. And I was a couple of weeks ago, saw Ricky Medlock and Johnny Van Zant from Skinner, and I happened to be it, we I was in Lexington, Kentucky, and just ran into him. And it's like we've been buddies over the years, but it's like it's that kind of thing in my head. I'm like, how the hell am I, I can call those dudes friends. I can, text them or call them if I need to. It's a pretty trippy, trippy thing.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I love that stuff. Dean Rowling, Collective Soul, thank you so much for talking with us, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. Thank you, Dave.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. You rock.
All right. Thank you, man.
Yeah.